my lawyer thought we were going to win. I said, no, we're going to lose. And I had already mentally prepared for a loss. I needed to wake people up because people thought that the 2018 was a done deal and it was all done and dusted. This loss has woken everybody up to realize what I've been trying to say to them. This is not going to be done until the fat white people in Britain sing. It's going to be a hard fought victory, but I'm going to win. I'm going to win.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. The trans pool pro sues English organizers to play as a woman. Trump tortures Maine over its trans inclusion. And Trinidad and Tobago's champion appeals the latest sodomy ruling. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm David Hunt.
With NewsWrap. A summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending April 12th, 2025. Is pool a gender-affected sport? Transgender professional player Harriet Haynes says it's not, so she's suing the English Blackball Pool Federation. The group that organizes county-level competitions in England only allows people assigned female at birth to compete in the female category for 8-ball. Haynes' lawsuit follows her April 6th win at the Ultimate Pool Women's Pro Series Event 2 in Wigan. She defeated trans player Lucy Smith, among others. Protesters inside the venue at Robin Park Leisure Center held banners saying, "Save women's sport," and "He's a man." Haynes can still compete in some other UK tournaments and play internationally. She's been barred from games sponsored by the English Blackball Pool Federation under a policy set in August 2023. The 34-year-old told Canterbury County Court on April 7th, "My success in pool in general is down to my efforts, whether in the women's section or open section." She credits good coaching and extensive practice for her victories, not biology. Federation attorney Sarah Crowther insisted that pool is a gender-affected sport. She told the court, "All Q sports have protected women's categories because the physique of male players means that male players have an advantage over female players." Crowther confronted Haynes on the nature versus nurture question, probing her assertion that her strengths were the result of practice and technique. Haynes replied, "I would say practice, definitely yes." Crowther then asked Haynes if she would acknowledge that pool is, in fact, gender-affected. Haynes answered, "I'm not an expert on it." For an expert opinion, Haynes submitted a report by an MIT professor. The conclusion there was, there is no inherent male advantage if a player can break above a certain speed, a velocity that can be achieved by both genders. The case continues.
In more transgender sports news, Redmond Sullivan is no longer a member of the Wagner College iconic fencing club. The specifics of her departure remain a secret, and references to her tournaments have been removed from the Staten Island, New York private university's website. Sullivan was catapulted into the national spotlight in March when cisgender female opponent Stephanie Turner protested her inclusion in the Cherry Blossom Open. Turner forfeited the match and posted a statement that went viral. Sullivan was a member of Wagner's men's fencing team during the 2023 to 2024 season. She has competed for the women's team in several matches during the first half of the current season. Turner represents the Fencing Academy of Philadelphia. She had finished 4 earlier matches at the Cherry Blossom Open before she was set to face Sullivan. Until the anti-transgender executive orders of the Trump administration, the National Collegiate Athletic Association was in sync with the inclusive policies of USA Fencing and its international governing body. Now the NCAA has declared, a student athlete assigned male at birth may not compete on a women's team. In response to the Sullivan controversy, USA Fencing stood by the 2023 policy its statement said, was designed to expand access to the sport of fencing and create inclusive, safe spaces. Sullivan's own iconic fencing club initially supported her. They insisted, following the Cherry Blossom tournament incident, that she had adhered to all of USA Fencing's rules and guidelines, and stressed the sport's deep tradition of honor, sportsmanship, inclusion, and respect. However, now Sullivan is gone, and all Wagner College spokesperson Jim Chiavelli will say is, "We are in full compliance with NCAA and NEC rules and regulations. The fencer is not a member of our fencing team." Meanwhile, the U.S. Department of Education and the Department of Justice have launched a discrimination investigation into USA Fencing's trans-inclusive policy.
The issue of transgender student athletes is part of the reason federal education funding for the state of Maine is being frozen. That's the Trump administration's way of punishing the state for refusing to ban transgender girls and women from competing in school female sports. The freeze was announced last week by U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins. Maine's Attorney General Aaron Frey has now asked a federal judge for a temporary restraining order to release those funds. Maine argues that the money being withheld is used to feed school children and disabled adults. Frey charged that Rollins was acting more like a hostage taker seeking a ransom payment than a cabinet-level federal official. Democratic Governor Janet Mills' February 21st run-in with Trump over Maine's support for trans female athletes went viral.
Is Maine here, the governor of Maine? Huh? Are you not going to comply with it?
Fine with state federal laws.
We are the federal law. So you better comply, because otherwise you're not getting any federal funding.
See you in court.
Agriculture Secretary Rollins responded to Maine's lawsuit defiantly, claiming, "You cannot openly violate federal law against discrimination in education and expect federal funding to continue unabated." Rollins extended the false narrative with, "This is only the beginning, though you are free to end it at any time by protecting women's and girls in compliance with federal law." The state is also being punished for violating Trump policy by refusing to transfer trans female prisoners to male facilities. Maine's Department of Corrections confirms that the U.S. Justice Department has canceled grants that support post-relief supervision and reentry services, according to Maine Morning Star. These resources help prevent recidivism and reduce crime. In a media statement, Maine's Attorney General Frey proclaimed that Trump is not above the law and Maine will not be bullied into violating state law.
Queer-themed titles top the American Library Association's list of the most banned books for the fourth consecutive year. Number one and number two are All Boys Aren't Blue by George M. Johnson and Gender Queer by Maya Kobabe. They've both been on the list since 2021. There have been no substantial changes in the ALA list since 2023. The top 10 banned books also include Flamer by Mike Curato, The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, The Perks of Being a Wallflower by Stephen Chbosky, and Looking for Alaska by John Green. Director of the ALA's Office for Intellectual Freedom, Deborah Caldwell Stone, told NBC News that parental challenges only accounted for 16% of the complaints. She said Moms for Liberty and other far-right groups are behind the majority of the demands to have a book yanked from the library shelves. Most involved false claims of illegal obscenity for minors, according to the ALA report. Other hot topics included anything dealing with race, racism, diversity, equity, inclusion, and social justice. The attacks on books has a chilling effect on librarians, who are increasingly reluctant to stock books that may be controversial. According to the ALA's Caldwell Stone, librarians don't want to get prosecuted or otherwise face legal trouble. A lot of librarians are operating under these kinds of threats. It can get worse. The Trump administration has ordered the virtual elimination of the Institute of Museum and Library Services. Dozens of grants to state and local libraries are outright canceled. Those actions are already being challenged in court.
Finally,
How low can you go?
White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt says, as a matter of policy, we do not respond to reporters with pronouns in their bios. The Trumpian reasoning? Leavitt told the New York Times this week, any reporter who chooses to put their preferred pronouns in their bio clearly does not care about biological reality or truth and therefore cannot be trusted to write an honest story. Crooked media reporter Matt Berg told the Times, I find it baffling that they care more about pronouns than giving journalists accurate information. But here we are. Soon after his inauguration, Trump's Office of Personnel Management denounced gender ideology and sent a memo to the entire federal workforce, essentially forbidding references to personal pronouns in all workplace communications. The White House lost another word game this week. A federal judge ordered it to reinstate the Associated Press to briefings and related media-attended events. Its reporters had been exiled for refusing to comply with a Trump edict to change the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending April 12, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt. Stay healthy.
And I'm Rhett. Stay safe.
Brother to brother, brother to brother, brother to brother, brother to brother.
This is Essex Hemphill, reminding you that you've tuned into This Way Out.
Homophobia, turn me around. Keep on a walking, keep on a talking.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
The mighty rise to meet the challenge.
Yeah, we stand and we fight and we shall not fail.
Now is the time for action.
Tell them you're ready now, come with me.
So let we choose to love, yeah.
And together we can move the clouds from gray to fine and make sunshine TNT. There's no greater time than now.
The Caribbean Republic of Trinidad and Tobago is stuck in a time warp. Its 16th century British colonial era ban on same-gender intimacy was struck down in 2018, only to be reinstated by an appeals court just a few weeks ago. However, it's not the end of the fight for the rights of Trinidad and Tobago's 100,000 LGBTQ plus citizens. This Way Out's David Hunt met the activist who has led the way as he pushes for the next and final round of legal challenges.
Crowds on the steps of the Hall of Justice in Port of Spain, the capital city of Trinidad and Tobago, erupted in cheers on learning that the High Court had struck down the Caribbean nation's archaic anti-gay sodomy statutes. But that was then, April 12, 2018. 7 years later, March 25, 2025, the silence outside the courthouse was deafening. That was the day, just a few weeks ago, that a three-judge appeals court panel overturned the High Court ruling, putting the anti-gay laws back on the books. But there's one voice that refuses to be silenced.
It's going to be a hard-fought victory, but I'm going to win.
That voice belongs to Jason Jones, a biracial, binational, queer activist who sued his home country in 2017, asserting that the colonial-era ban on gay sex violates his constitutional rights to privacy, liberty, and freedom of expression. Jones, who has fought for human rights on two continents for four decades, isn't about to stop now. He's appealing the appellate court decision, and this time the courtroom drama will play out in London before the Judicial Committee of the Privy Council.
at a place where a medieval refuge called Sanctuary Tower once stood. If that's an omen, it's one Jones will readily embrace as he fights to overturn laws that date to the reign of Henry VIII. I'm David Hunt. The island nation of Trinidad and Tobago, the southernmost country in the Caribbean, gained independence from the United Kingdom in 1962, after 160 years as a British Crown colony. But that history is not as remote or irrelevant as it seems. With the breakup of the British Empire after the Second World War, it was common for former British colonies to insert language into their constitutions, protecting existing colonial-era laws from being challenged on constitutional grounds. This language was called a savings clause or savings law clause, and it did just that. It preserved the legal status quo as former colonies transitioned to independence. But in some former colonies, including Trinidad and Tobago, that created a problem. The world has changed a lot since the waning days of the British Empire. Laws covered by the savings clause have not. Even though Trinidad and Tobago adopted a new constitution in 1976 when it became a republic, and even though that more modern constitution has been amended more than a dozen times, the savings clause is still there, still in effect. And among the old British laws it protects from judicial challenge is the Sexual Offences Act. Section 13 of that act criminalizes buggery, an old English word for sodomy, while Section 16 criminalizes serious indecency between persons of the same sex. Buggery became part of English common law in 1533, giving King Henry VIII more control over vices that had been policed by the Catholic Church. It remained a capital offense until 1861. Jason Jones, who now lives in London, seat of a more constrained monarchy, grew up in Trinidad and Tobago, where he saw the impact of Britain's colonial legacy firsthand. While Britain decriminalized gay sex in 1967 and approved same-sex marriage in 2014, its former colonies are largely stuck in the past, an anti-gay past.
Well, that's the thing with colonialism. You know, they gave us independence and that was it. They didn't give us anything else. So it's like, here you are, freedom, and fuck off. But what that did was it left us 50 years behind the global north. So not only did they just walk out, wash their hands and say, fuck off, you're free, but they then hamstrung us with the savings clause so that we couldn't even get out of this cycle of violence that they have within British colonialism.
The legal strategy behind Jones's case was mapped out by London solicitor Peter Laverack, then studying to become a barrister. He discovered that Trinidad and Tobago had changed its Sexual Offences Act three times in 1976, 1986, and 2000. Because the law had been changed, Laverack asserted, it could no longer be protected from judicial challenge by the Savings Clause. The original law was effectively gone. The strategy found a receptive party in High Court Justice Devendra Rampersad, who ruled against the government in April 2018, striking down the anti-gay sections of the Sexual Offences Act. The ruling surprised everyone. Well, almost everyone.
I knew we had presented such a powerful case, and the judge, Justice Devendra Rampersad, who is a Hindu pundit in his private life, had said very early on in the case that religion had no place in this matter. He knew that there would be a lot of religious stuff thrown around, but he's not entertaining it. This is a human rights issue, constitutional issue.
7 years later, in March 2025, as the appellate court prepared to render its verdict on the government's appeal, thinking had changed. This time, Jones was the pessimist.
My lawyers thought we were going to win. I said, no, we're going to lose. And I had already mentally prepared for a loss.
Two of the three judges on the appellate panel, Justices Nolan Barreau and Charmaine Pemberton, ruled for the government. And just like that, the Sexual Offences Act, with its anti-gay sodomy sections, was saved.
But that's not the end of the road or this story. The next chapter is set in London. Will the Empire strike back or strike out? You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt. Jason Jones, a biracial, binational queer activist, sued his country of birth, Trinidad and Tobago, in 2017 to overturn anti-gay sections of the Caribbean Nations Sexual Offenses Act. He unexpectedly won the first round in court in 2018, then, just as unexpectedly, lost on appeal this year, 2025. Even though Trinidad and Tobago is an independent republic with its own courts, its legal system is rooted in Britain's colonial era. A quirk of that legacy is that Trinidad and Tobago's Court of Final Judgment does not sit in Port of Spain, the capital city. It's called the Judicial Committee of the Privy Council, and it sits in London in the Supreme Court building. Later this year, the council will take up the case of Jones versus Trinidad and Tobago. Jones explains.
The appeal is in process. I have 21 days, so we're drafting the appeal now. Even though it's not a great position to go into the appeal at the Supreme Court level, I needed to wake people up because people thought that the 2018 was a done deal and it was all done and dusted. This loss has woken everybody up to realize what I've been trying to say to them. This is not going to be done until the fat white people in Britain sing. And that's where we're headed. And listen, it's going to be a difficult victory, for sure.
The journey that led Jones to London and to prominence as a queer activist began in Trinidad and Tobago, where he was born shortly after the country gained independence, and where he grew up in a family and community that encouraged his love of the performing arts.
I sang solo in the churches. My grandmother played the organ in the Catholic Church, so I was a kind of central figure in the Catholic Church choirs. Then got involved with performing and theater, and you know, that kind of became my queer family. As I tell people, I never came out. My parents outed me when I was about 14 because of the homophobic bullying that I was receiving. Luckily, I had very enlightened parents who weren't afraid to deal with what the issue was. Both my parents were journalists, so they were both very intelligent and very aware of homosexuality, and were friends with gay men. So, you know, this was not an unknown quantity to them.
Jones also cites the influence of his stepfather, Black Power activist Rex LaSalle, for encouraging his self-acceptance and self-reliance. LaSalle gained fame in April 1970 when, as an army lieutenant, he led a mutiny against the government, refusing orders to fire on citizens during a brutal crackdown of the Black Power movement.
You know, Rex was seen as quite a hero of the Black civil rights movement around the world, not just in Trinidad. So by the time he was living with us in our home, you know, it was very clear to me that this was a person of great importance. It always kind of led me to believe that I could do whatever I wanted, you know, that I had a choice.
LaSalle made it possible for Jones to make a move that would change his life, a move across an ocean and across a cultural divide to 1980s London. It was in London where Jones took his first steps as a human rights activist, joining protests against the UK's notorious Section 28.
Section 28 was a law passed by Margaret Thatcher and the Conservatives, which forbade the promotion of homosexuality, which in effect meant that libraries couldn't stock books, teachers couldn't speak about it in schools. You know, it literally, anything in the public domain that was funded by government, you couldn't mention anything to do with homosexuality.
Jones was also instrumental in the late 1990s in clearing the way for the foreign partners of gays and lesbians to legally reside in the UK, a victory that led to civil partnerships and then to marriage equality. In the mid-1990s, Jones was back in Trinidad and Tobago, where he founded the Lambda Group, the first LGBTQ advocacy group in the Southern Caribbean. At the same time, he became the target of homophobic threats after performing in drag.
It was soul-destroying, especially as, you know, there was no safety whatsoever. I mean, the American embassy offered me their plane to get me off the island. But I knew at that point that if I did accept that, it would, number one, reinforce the narrative that gay is a white man disease from the global north. And two, it would also kind of, you know, I didn't want to be seen as this coward that dropped a bomb and then turned tail and ran at the first sign of problems. So I literally had to write it out.
The violent backlash to Jones's drag performance drove him back to London, but it also drove him into court, spurring his lawsuit against Trinidad and Tobago and its Anti-Gay Sexual Offenses Act. Ironically, that lawsuit now follows him to London. A ruling in Jones's favor could lead to the decriminalization of same-sex intimacy in other Commonwealth countries, potentially impacting millions of LGBTQ people in former UK colonies.
The thing with the JCPC is that even though they're white, British, and sit in London, when they sit on a matter like this, it's as if they're sitting in Trinidad and Tobago. So it's one thing to say, oh, well, you know, throw our hands up, we have nothing to do, it's a savings clause. But it's another one to condemn LGBTQ plus people to a society that's endemically homophobic using laws that you created. So it's going to be a hard-won battle, for sure.
For his part, Jones is ready to pass the torch of activism to the next generation, a generation he hopes to inspire to carry that torch proudly and bravely, as he was inspired by his mentors.
I don't want to be here forever. I literally want to sling my hang-up between two coconut trees and sip pina coladas and mentor. That's it. I do not want to be in the cut and thrust of advocacy anymore.
I'd like to thank Jason Jones for sharing his story for this feature. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Rhett and David Hunt and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was David Hunt. Chubby Checker, The Rolling Stones, The No Greater Time Collective, and The Hilltop Trio performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, Steve Sims of Seattle, Washington, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Email us at info@thiswayout.org or write us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappelle, and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KSKQ, Ashland, Oregon, WOZO Knoxville, Tennessee, 2MTM Coonabal, New South Wales, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.